Christmas. Did I stay here to ask Dan for Christmas?
Well, I'm happy to. If you have a question or a question for Tim,
Well, I think that's an important one to have a, I hope you have a bit of a discussion about that today, but I'm using this as an example. Through the health and hospitals reform process, and we can have arguments about, what bits Labor didn't pick up and we did pick up and all of those sorts of things, and we'll go back and have a really good look at that as a policy document, and again, it's often about what is possible. But if you try and then say, what did that mean? I mean, there was a huge amount of money that came through that process, through the National Partnership Agreements. But you ask anybody, you ask numbers of members of Parliament, you ask members on the street, what does that mean? But people can't actually explain it to you. So when we're starting to argue, well, this is what's been taken away, how do you explain that to people? Well, obviously people understand hospital beds, they understand nurses, they understand doctors, and can I get in to see an emergency department? But I think that is one of the problems we have in health reform, is that we've very much focused on the system and not necessarily then explained it. The National Disability Insurance Scheme, I think, is a very good example of where people have such substantial ownership of the scheme. It's meant that it's been very challenging for future governments of any political persuasion to mess too much with it. And I think it provides a really good example of how people have ownership, understand. Again, there's going to be debate about what services happen where and who's eligible and all of those things, but the actual thematics of it have been very important. And Medicare is very similar to that. I think Australians have strong ownership of Medicare, understand what it is, and that's been part of the reason the debate's been so strong about the GP tax, is about people's ownership of it. So for me, as we start to go forward into the we want to put forward in health reform, and there's much good work that's been done that I don't want to see lost, and good groundwork that's been done that we'll hopefully be able to still be there to build on in 2016, but we need to bring people with us, and I'm not sure that we've always done that as a group of healthcare providers. The comment, I'll leave it as a comment, but I think that's partly the point I'm making. There's got to be room for both. Like, I think the sort of expertise that's within this room, the ideas that come up, people who understand the system, it's very important that drives health reform. But I think that when I, as a policymaker, come at it, I have to look at it from the perspective of how do I bring people with me? How do you actually make sure that it's how people experience and access healthcare that's at the fundamentals of anything that we do and anything that we change. In government, we had the same challenges in terms of falls in revenue that the current government has. We had the same problems in terms of, it's not a surprise to anybody that we do have an ageing population that hasn't suddenly happened this year. It's not a surprise that, we have more chronic disease. That's been happening for a while. All the statistics have been pointing to that. Shouldn't be a shock to anybody about that. In government, we had to make decisions around finding savings within the healthcare budget. We did that, not always popular. It took us a long time to get it through the House, the means testing of private health insurance. We did introduce some changes to the extended Medicare safety net, which we do acknowledge put more costs onto patients, and we've accepted those bills going through the Parliament now as well. So we did do that. But right at the heart of all of our thinking was about how do you make the system sustainable at the same time as not punishing patients. And that's what I think, you know, one of the fundamental mistakes this government's making is it's not interested, it doesn't seem to be interested in that part of the system, but it seems to be only interested in the savings part of the system.
One of the disappointments out of the Labor reform process was the inability to address the state-Commonwealth divide. I'm just wondering what Labor plans for 2016 in terms of overcoming those demarcation disputes, looking at potential for funds pooling between Commonwealth and state and shared purchasing, rather than us running a competitive arrangement between states and Commonwealth, which sees fragmentation and the silos getting worse, not better.
Yeah. Look, I think we can have an endless discussion in health about this, and we have done for a long period of time, and I don't think we're ever going to absolutely solve it. We just aren't. It's the nature of the federation we have, the nature of the system we have. So what we have to do is try and build on what we've got. And that to some extent, is what the National Partnerships Agreements were about. I authored a paper, it's a long time ago now, it was back in the 90s with Dr. Vivian Lynn when we did the public health outcome funding agreements. And one of the things I learned from that process, I was in the Department of Health at the time, of negotiating that with the states and territories, is the importance of trying to take the heat out of the arguments around financing, because that's where all the arguments are. And once you can take the heat out of that argument, and that often does require extra dollars or it requires dollars being spent in a more efficient and different way, then you can actually have some really good discussions about policy. And that's a lesson that I continue to hold. I think what we saw through the National Partnership Agreements, and as I sort of said in my presentation, is largely a lot of that argy-bargy had died away. We had a couple of breakouts, you know, in the lead-up to the election campaign about the application around the formula and a bit of opportunistic sort of Liberal state governments having a crack at Labor about that. But largely it's gone away, and you've seen clinicians, you've seen state government departments, state ministers around the table at SCO, pretty actively engaged in health policy reform in a way we haven't seen for a while. So I think it is possible, but it's never going to be perfect. I think if we've got some idea in our heads that, you know, if only there weren't states, if only the Commonwealth did this, then it would just be perfect. I think it's just not how health systems work. I think it's always going to be iterative, built with, and we're going to need to build on what we've got.
Okay, one last question, John.
Well, I think the point you're making about presenting a clear vision to the Australian public and getting into the roads is terribly important. I had the opportunity a couple of years ago, thanks to the Virgin General Tax, the University of Queensland, to do a series of town hall meetings all around Australia, explaining integrated primary care. Put in straightforward language, response with overwhelming enthusiasm. But I think it's also terribly important for the politicians in opposition. Don't retreat to the statements we've been quoted that they've been some of your colleagues about we're the opposition. We don't have to throw out the job with foreign policy. We're just telling you this policy, the current government, etc. And I think a clear vision from Labor as to what you would do, because that the reasonable person would always say, well, what would you do about shifting?
Yeah.
That clear vision, which I would hope we would share, needs to be explained by politicians.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I think the challenge in opposition, obviously a lot of the focus has been on the budget, and it had to be, frankly. There's too much in it that we cannot just let go, and there's too much at stake if we do, so that's been very important to do that, and there are things in there that are frankly just offensive to healthcare reform, are offensive to the way in which we actually see how you deal with people within a complex health system, so we've had to do that. But you are absolutely right. It does require us to bring people with us, to talk to people, to develop policy that actually builds from that bottom up. And those town hall meetings are a great example of the way in which you start to get some ownership on complex policy issues. You know, integrated primary care, we know what that means, but people, it's how people actually experience it that's important, I think.
All right. Thanks very much for coming and sharing time.
Thank you, Michael. So good luck in the deliberation.